Hello, 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 and hello, and welcome to the Leap Day, February 29th edition of the Laughing Place podcast. My name is Mike Brady.
You know, it's the year of the frog.
I get it.
Ribbit.
And this is my bunch. We've got little Bobby Brady over there, Captain John.
Stupid Academy.
On my right, we have the lovely and talented Marcia Brady.
Happy working song.
And across, we have the one with the lisp, Cindy Brady, fanboy.
Sucker and Suckatath. Wrong company.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't work for Acme.
Podcast, laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. Let us know what's on your mind. We want to hear more about your opinion of what would make a good niche park. We asked for that last week. We've got some good feedback. But we're going to hold off on that until next week so we can get even more of your fab feedback.
Oh, I got an idea.
Shoot.
It'll be sort of this dark, evil kingdom, and it would have a big evil overlord, and he would live in the kingdom tower and cast an evil shadow upon, and you could like try and overtake the kingdom tower and destroy it to bring magic back to the kingdom.
That's not a bad idea, actually. And it could star that guy from Lost. What's his name?
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Benjamin?
Charlie.
Oh, because he's a hobbit.
Oh,
you sure you don't want to just get Frank Oz?
Okay. I'm with you.
He's not tall enough to ride anything anyway. Once again, podcastlaughplace.com, 866-718-9408. Let's jump into the Aussie pool. Rebecca, what is our breaking news today?
Breaking news, Will?
Oh, it broke yesterday.
Yeah, I guess it did. The Sydney Morning Herald, right? Yeah, the Sydney Morning Herald reports that Disney is considering plans for the White Bay area, which is right there at Sydney Harbor.
Correction, Disney was considering plans for the White Bay
actually,
area in Sydney Harbor.
The way it's written is that they are considering, but that the discussions happened a year ago. That's the way the article was written.
You can save your opinions for later.
No, I can save the fact for now. Disney considered.
Rebecca, you want to finish?
The spokesman says, as part of that, John Nicoletti said, the company constantly explores opportunities to grow, that there are, quote, no active concepts at present, and that as part of that process, we have conversations with lots of entities, and while Australia is an attractive market, at this time we have no plans for this region.
Fanboy, you have any thoughts on that?
As John Nicoletti said, they're not considering it. Who cares? This is such a non-story. They considered building something. They decided not to for whatever reason. And so move on with your life.
You don't really mince words, do you?
No, it's stupid. It's like we might have traded for Barry Bonds, but we didn't. So move on.
According to the New South Wales State Development Minister, Ian MacDonald, he confirmed that he spoke with representatives from Disney, that the discussions took place last year and again earlier this year, and that Disney Parks and Resorts were interested in the site. They had a broad range of ideas. Nothing was finalized in any shape or form. They had some basic concepts for use of the site for both tourism and entertainment.
Not the twain should meet.
So I still wonder if perhaps they're doing some initial investigations into a cruise location, because with the development of the talk out there of the developing the Hawaii project with a port location, you can easily set up a two-week cruise between Hawaii and Sydney, and Royal Caribbean, Carnival, they already offer this type of package. And I know that the popularity of the two-week Panamanian cruise seems to me that no-brainer as far as, you know, at least investigating the possibility, because they know they have a market for a two-week cruise. So.
I know a lot of Disney fans would like the cruise line to go to Australia, but I was once told
it is very far away.
So maybe as Fanboy said, that's not in the imminent plan. So one rumor up, one rumor down.
The thing that was most interesting to me in the articles that I read in the both in they were Australian papers was that neither one discussed.
Were they translated or?
Stop. Neither one discussed, even like hinted at the possibility of the cruises. It was all, well, Disney build a Disneyland here in Sydney Harbor. And I just found it fascinating that it didn't even, that their media right. wasn't even in touch to even speculate the possibility of something other than, oh, it's Disney. Oh, it must be a theme park.
I just don't. I remember the last time I took a flight from Sydney to Los Angeles, and it didn't end very well.
You know.
It landed somewhere in the trench.
What was that flight number again?
815.
815?
Didn't go well.
Yeah. Oceanic Air. Not a good airline.
Are they still around?
They just reopened, actually.
Yeah, didn't you see those billboards in where were they? One was in Germany somewhere. They had another
one. One was in Sydney.
And all those ads during that show that nobody watched.
Yeah, yeah. Eli Stone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're still
apparently they have some internal issues, though, because if you go to their website, it's been hacked by some sort of employee. No, an employee warning you about Flight 815.
So. That's the real secret. All the Dharma Initiative was to assimilate everybody into the collective.
Let's see. Today is Thursday, February 28th.
Which means Lost is on. Woohoo!
Yeah, we're excited. If I'm not mistaken, Fanboy will not be here to enjoy Lost with us next week because he will be where?
Albuquerque. Which might be worse than being stuck on an island in the Sunda Trench.
Hey, we have listeners in Albuquerque, perhaps.
Make sure you take a left turn, or else you may wind up anywhere.
You know, I think that they decided to set High School Musical in Albuquerque, so I went to go see High School Musical last week, live on stage in the Science
Orlando
Center. They keep mentioning Albuquerque, but they still film the film in Salt Lake. I can't imagine that Albuquerque is the most expensive place to shoot a film, yet they still did it in Salt Lake City.
So, Fanboy will be at the shareholders meeting next March 4th.
4th? How many days are in a week?
Oh, this is February. It only has 29 days. That's right. Okay, I'm sorry. March 6th. I was thinking 31.
Yeah,
and then
this February only normally has 29 days. Yeah, Stevie. I'm going to miss the soft opening of...
The rest of us will be here listening to the live webcast of the shareholders meeting, which all of you can do as well at what, disney.go.com/investors?
Yes, actually.
Yep, that would be correct.
And if you haven't been to a shareholders meeting before, we've talked before about what to expect, but let's go again.
Mr. Eisner.
Why should a Disney fan give a listen, and what should they be on the lookout for? This isn't just going to be a bunch of boring numbers. This is going to be...
Well, last year I know it was very exciting when John Lasseter introduced the Frog Princess to the gathered crowd. And his energy and enthusiasm because Pixar had been brought into the fold. And it's a chance to hear the leadership of the company talk about what they have a passion for. You see what their vision is in their own words, as opposed to how it's translated to you in the newspapers. You get to hear it from the source.
It's the equivalent of the State of the Union for the Walt Disney Company.
What is the State of the Walt Disney Company?
Strong.
Strong buy, actually.
Oh, that's like those crazy investor jokes. Did you hear that Barron's told Lehman Brothers that they were a stronghold? Oh, Doobie, your debt rating is so BBB+.
Oh, man, our nerd quotient is just rising as we speak.
Oh, it's painful.
But, like, for example, when I went to Anaheim 2 years ago, John Lasseter's talking. They just acquired Pixar Animation Studios, so he's talking about Meet the Robinsons, as the new head of the Disney Animation Studios and what they kind of wanted to see animation and how they're going to bring that to the parks. But then, we all know that you're to expect that. However, then, as John Lasseter's giving the stage back to Bob Iger, and he gives Big Bob Iger a hug and to kind of point to him and like, he's the man, like, and you fully expected him to like lift him up and sing We Are the Champions. And you never got that with Michael. And sort of to see those personal interactions that you don't normally get to see, it's more than just the words that are spoken, because you can read a press release for that, but just the way it's presented, the way they handle the question and answer period, I think is very insightful. And then what the company is choosing to highlight. I think the choice of Albuquerque and what's on the cover of the annual report is very telling this year.
I'm looking forward to the high five between Zac Efron and Evelyn. I think that's going to go over pretty well.
No, I was just going to ask about the New Orleans meeting. Is that when the Pixar relationship was finalized, or is my memory just off?
No, it was finalized is an odd term. It was the first year that John Lasseter spoke was in Anaheim.
Right.
The second year was when John Lasseter just spoke again, talking the reason being it was in New Orleans. The Princess and the Frog has a connection to that part. That's why Robin Roberts was there as well.
Right.
It wasn't as much as his coming out party was the one in Anaheim.
Okay, okay. I can, for some reason, I always equate the Frog Princess announcement with the bringing in of Pixar, but no, that was in Anaheim. Mm.
I understand, Fanboy, you have some advice and everyone should vote on their proxy this year?
Yeah, just vote with the board.
You got it. I think we may put it over the top with
I really think PricewaterhouseCoopers has done a fantastic job as the independent accounting firm, LLC, because they did a great job with the Oscars.
Sigh.
Speaking of the Oscars, we all get to see at least the Disney portion of the Oscars?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, how did Pirates do, Captain?
Well, it was nominated with both visual effects and, I believe, makeup, I think it was, and it did not.
Did it lose to Norbit?
Ooh, can you imagine that double feature?
It'd still be going on.
The visual effects went to Golden Compass. I think what was nominated was Transformers, Pirates, and Golden Compass.
So the one I didn't see.
Yeah. I think the one that nobody saw is the one that won.
I think Transformers should have won, but they just didn't get that the robots are in disguise.
Oh, not in the sky? Robots in disguise.
You serious?
No.
Oh. Okay.
It wouldn't surprise
me. Never know with you. Yeah. The other day?
We're not going there.
Every kiss begins with every.
Nobody doesn't like Sara Lee either, by the way.
Yeah, but at least that's on their frequently asked questions. Nobody's saying every gift begins with K. Every gift begins with G. Every kiss begins with K. Safety begins with S.
And we had, you know, all those musical performances.
Weren't those well done, though?
Those were awesome.
I thought they did a great job of bringing Enchanted to the live stage.
And those were three Oscar-worthy songs that all lost.
To an unworthy song.
And we're not biased.
Oh, I am.
But the highlight... that's not true. I wouldn't say highlight. But the nicest surprise of the Oscar broadcast of all that I watched, which was those three songs and what I'm about to mention, was Miley Cyrus's presenting. She was very elegant, very...
Poised.
And yet, when she was up there, it was still a kid talking. I really liked the way she portrayed herself.
A Southern child, too.
Yeah.
Very clearly, Southern child.
Anybody planning on watching the CMT Awards? Because I can't because of religious convictions. However,
I'm going to at least watch the opening.
I plan to now because of the announcement that Billy Ray and Miley will be hosting them. I would like to see them
Miley
for that
and the
reason.
We went to Mike and Mike at Disney's Boardwalk today. And they...
Mike and Mike in the Morning, the ESPN radio show, they were taping live in front of an audience as part of the ESPN weekend kickoff.
In front of a live studio audience.
Yeah. True.
And
it was actually live, not like this.
I haven't watched our taping of it to see if we ended up on camera or not. I have to watch that later.
If we're on camera and they know you were there and they recognize us, they may be able to figure out who Fanboy is.
Oh, yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay. First of all, they mentioned Miley Cyrus as someone that they might want to switch places with.
Mm-hmm.
And but then I think Mike Golick just mentioned – or Mike Greenberg, they're both, one of the Mikes, mentioned that they just wouldn't want to have memories of their father having a mullet.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, we were sitting with some folks from Boston.
Yes.
And, you know,
Boston.
You know how they are about their sports. The Bruins, the Patriots, the Celtics, and the
Red
baseball
Sox.
Team. Yeah, there we go. And the...
Red Stockings, I believe.
The Revolution.
Yes, the Revolution. The very important Boston Revolution.
Prince.
No.
Tea party.
Okay.
Market. But then, you know, so we're sort of being timid because, you know, we're sports fans, but we're also sort of softer California sports fans. And
we understand balance.
Yeah. And
more
so somehow it got out that we have tickets to the Jonas Brothers at the Pyramid next week. And the father, who's, you know, just Mr. Tom Brady, how do you get tickets to the Jonas Brothers? And just starts talking about, like,
how much he loves them.
You're like, whoa, where did that come from?
That was funny, because I was actually a little nervous about going, because it's, you know, we're going because we want to be able to share one of the other things that Disney is involved with, the Jonas Brothers phenomenon, and wanted to see it firsthand. And I wasn't really sure what to expect, but now this Boston dad has me somewhat excited.
We know we can expect Patriot fans.
Yeah.
And flash photography, because it's allowed at the Jewish
Festival. What was the other moment that we had chatting with that couple? And it was when we were talking about Magical Express, and we were just, you know, talking with them about their trips to Disney. And I don't remember if it was, I don't know how it came up, but Doobie mentioned Year of a Million Dreams. Oh, no, I remember what it was. It was the promo. It was the ad during the break. Yeah. They were talking about the Year of a Million Dreams. And the lady across the table from us says, don't they mean decade? The decade of the years.
It was fun. One thing that was cool, though, is I never knew, anecdotally at least, that people actually came for ESPN the weekend.
Right.
I didn't know if it was a local thing or just people kind of stumbled upon it, maybe more of a broadcast side of the thing, so they didn't. But they actually brought like 11 people to go to the weekend. And it's not – they saw it on TV. They liked it so much in the previous years that they've spread the word.
Yeah. And this year they all left their kids behind. So it's just – it's going to be groups of roaming adults.
And somewhere Macaulay Culkin is slapping
exactly.
his cheeks.
Exactly. Well, they were on the – so actually at one point during the taping, they were on their cell phone talking with their kids. And they were saying that their kids were not very pleased with them for coming without them. But then they quickly added, however, we did just bring them here in August. So it was a lot of fun. Something I didn't expect, but I'm so looking forward to ESPN the weekend. That just got me all fired up for it again. So that was fun.
Ba-da-not.
Yep.
Next on our list, issue number 11 of Tales from the Laughing Place magazine is now on newsstands, or at least on the Laughing Place store. So it is shipping, and the focus of this issue is Epcot's 25th anniversary. There's an extensive interview with Marty Sklar, Eric Jacobson, and others in there.
Is he related to Nina Jacobson?
I don't know.
Just curious.
And our publisher, Lee McDonald, I talked with him yesterday, and we're going to play a little bit of that as we learn a little more about how Epcot came to be.
Okay, this is Doobie, and I'm here with Lee McDonald, the publisher of Tales from the Laughing Place magazine. Issue number 11 is now in the hands of its readers, and we're going to talk about the focus of issue number 11, which is Epcot's 25th anniversary.
You almost got it then, Doobie.
I paused there for you to say it, but then I realized you weren't expecting that, so I'm just kidding. And the feature article is a huge interview with whom?
It's with Martin A. Sklar, who, as most people will know, has been around pretty much since the dawn of Walt Disney Imagineering. He now takes a ambassador role, effectively spreading the word amongst the fan community and amongst Disney employees and to their participants about what Imagineering does, and tries to sort of demystify a little bit of what they actually do and what they can actually provide to people.
Now, there are some things in this article, both in terms of text and photos, that I haven't seen and read before. What kind of access did you get from WDI for this article?
I must admit, we've had a fantastic working relationship with Walt Disney Imagineering for the past 3 years. As I say, the magazine has been out since December 2004 now. So we've always worked really well with them, and we've known Lindsay Cave, who's our creative director, and I have known Marty for a number of years, and he'd been pushing us to really sort of expand out on our coverage and start talking more about the parks as a whole as opposed to individual attractions or shows, which still is the primary focus of what we do from the Parks and Resorts segment. So he called and sort of said, we'd love to do this discussion with you relating to Epcot's 25th that's coming up. I guess to a degree he was a little disappointed that that the company wasn't doing more for the park's birthday. And so it was actually him and a very small group at WDI that were responsible for putting together the little ceremony they had to sort of rededicate the park and the temporary exhibit that was in Future World during that time as well. So we spoke to Marty on a number of occasions, but the main interview was sort of about an hour and a half, really just talking through the development of Epcot, how it all came about, and really his thoughts as to how it's transitioned through the last 25 years, and sort of concluded with a few thoughts as to where he thought the future of the first Second Gate theme park in the Disney Empire would go.
I know there's actually a series of articles on Epcot kind of progressing from that one with Marty up to the current. Who else were you able to talk to?
Well, we spoke to Eric Jacobson, who a lot of our readers and I'm sure a lot of people in the fan community will know who he is. He's a senior vice president and for a long time has been responsible for the show design effectively for the Walt Disney World Resort. And it was we originally were just going to talk to him about his involvement sort of taking over. He took over from Barry Braidman effectively as the lead for Epcot in the mid-90s. And we really just wanted to talk to him about that role, but it hadn't dawned on me, and I wasn't aware of the fact that he actually got his start on Epcot as it was going through development, and he was involved quite heavily with Journey into Imagination and Living Seas Pavilion, in particular in Future World, all the way back in the late 70s. In addition, we've got specific articles about some of the makeovers that they've done recently of the three main they've done three main makeovers of late. The first is Spaceship Earth, which has just opened. Thanks to Siemens sponsorship, they've been able to go in and add two new scenes and refresh the down ramp and the post-show area, which I guess a lot of people would admit has been pretty derelict since AT&T sponsorship finished. And we spoke to Bob Zork and Susan Bryan, two Imagineers that worked on that, and Pam Fisher, who's a long-serving show writer. And then the two other articles are around the development of the new O Canada movie with the producer and writer. And the final piece, I must admit, from an artwork perspective, it's my personal favourite in this current issue. We spoke with animation director George Scribner about the makeover of the boat ride in the Mexican Pavilion. And some of the artwork we got is these beautiful little screenshots that he's hand-drawn of Donald that he used that pepper the article. And I just, it's such a wonderful little sketch of Donald with sombrero and what have you.
Now, in speaking with Marty and Eric, who both have been with the park literally since its beginning, are there any particular things you learned about Epcot's history that stand out in your mind, or Epcot's future for that matter?
Yeah, I guess it was very difficult for them to speak probably as candidly as a lot of the Imagineers do in our articles in relation to there's an outstanding lawsuit that's still ongoing. So they were careful to avoid those sort of points. But I think Marty talked at great lengths about how hard it was initially, which I had never realized, to actually bring the participants together. He was very candid and said, I'm under no illusions that we could ever do a theme park like Epcot again. Because the participants, not only in the corporate world, so the General Motors, the Exxons of this world that sponsor pavilions in Future World, but also the country participants for World Showcase, were fundamentally instrumental to the development of not just the individual lands, but in terms of being able to provide them access to the right people, the right artifacts, the right history, the right research. And it never really dawned on me that that would be something that would be the driving factor, because I guess we all think of Imagineering sort of going out there and trying to create ideas themselves, and here they were actually really leveraging off of the participants that they have. And Marty in particular was quite candid talking about some of the countries that they were really keen to get involved in the World Showcase and for one reason or another couldn't. He talked about Iran a lot. Dick Nunes at the time, who was running the Walt Disney Company at the time, went out to Iran to meet the Shah. And they were very, very close to signing an agreement. And a week later, there was the Iranian Revolution. And he talked about Russia and Israel and all these other ideas that just never happened. And I certainly was too young. My first visit was in 83, and I was only 6 years old at the time, so I don't really remember it that well. But we've got some great photos of where there were physically placeholders in Future World saying, Spain coming soon, much like there was in the guidebook. It would say these countries were coming, and as we all know, they've only really added Norway as a substantial immersive pavilion in World Showcase. And I guess one of the big issues that sort of then dragging it the park through its history and the evolution of the various additional attractions like Figment, A Journey into Imagination, and The Living Seas, and latter, Wonders of Life, was really just in terms of how the park has now really evolved into the four-park universe and the impact that not only Magic Kingdom's success as the primary park in the resort, but also what, in terms of the way guests flow and everything happens on their vacations, the impact that Disney Hollywood Studios and now Disney's Animal Kingdom has on Epcot. And the one thing that really stuck out in my mind, and I certainly had never heard anyone admit to this within the company before, was Eric Jacobson said one of the hardest things that he had to do when he came on board in the mid-90s was really he stood back and said, well, what is Tomorrowland and what is Future World? And he said he couldn't, there was just too much blurring between the lines of the two. And I guess in particular with Tomorrowland of the 90s, with the makeover, with the new boulevards and the neons, and with Alien Encounter arriving, which as an attraction was something very unknown to the Magic Kingdom at that time. It had sort of morphed to a degree into a hybrid between a Tomorrowland and Future World. And obviously a lot of people talk at great lengths about what's happened with Tomorrowland and it becoming a cartoon environment with Stitch and with Monsters, Inc. But that's been a deliberate attempt by the company to really just drive the real family-orientated entertainment product through the characters in Magic Kingdom and leave Future World to being, to almost going back to being a more adult-focused theme park. It certainly doesn't have the historical attractions that World of Motion and the original Spaceship Earth was, but you've now got the likes of Soaring and Mission Space that are trying to redefine Future World as being the world of the future.
That's very interesting, so I'm going to stop you there. I know our LPP crew will want to discuss that as well. Before we go, as always, how can readers get Tales from the Laughing Place?
Say we've just issued, issue 11 has just come out, which is over half the magazine is dedicated to Epcot and the 25th and the new attractions that have debuted recently. To find out more information about the magazine as a whole and all our back issues, you can go to www.talesfromthelaughingplace.com, and there's links in there to all of the back issues and what have you. And they're all available to purchase through Laughing Place Store.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald, once again, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Mosley.
Thanks again, Lee McDonald. Once again, that's issue number 11 of Tales from the Laughing Place magazine at talesfromthelaughingplace.com or laughingplace.com up there in the upper right corner where it says out now. So, back to what he said. What'd you think? Does that make sense? And is that good? And is it already happening so it doesn't matter? What are your thoughts, people?
Well, isn't the retro future Tomorrowland that opened with Alien Encounter? That was the whole point. I mean, that's, I remember reading about it in Disney Magazine or Disney News or whatever it was called at that time, about how the idea was is that Epcot was the home to the scientific part. And so since Tomorrowland didn't have the future need to present the real future and was to make it timeless, a timeless future, a Buck Rogers future. And that was the same idea when they redid Disneyland's Tomorrowland in 1998, make it sort of aliens among us. We're rocking on spaceships, even though it's not – no one expects the future to have something like Stitch's Great Escape or Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. It was the idea of just creating
– I don't even want the present to have it.
A fantasy – touche. A fantasy tomorrow. And this might be the first time we hear it from someone officially from WDI, but we've definitely heard it from Disney publicity before. And I remember walking through Tomorrowland before the rehab and saying, here's Rocket to the Moon. Mission to Mars. Here's something that could belong in Epcot. How do they decide where to defer and besides what they have room for? And so when they announced the retro future and that it was sort of redefining Tomorrowland, I understood completely why they were doing it, for better or for worse.
I think that even more so is the entertainment element of Monsters, Inc. and Stitch. I think those comments help me to have a better understanding of why they made those choices for Tomorrowland. I had not kind of caught their vision about the difference between Tomorrowland being a place where I would find House of the Future versus now, you know, Epcot being the place where I would find House of the Future, at least here at Walt Disney. I mean, we're speaking Walt Disney World because that's where you have the Magic Kingdom and Epcot. I don't think we're trying to say that this is the same for the same plan for Disneyland, are we?
But I think it is, because the success of the retro future Tomorrowland with Timekeeper and you know, Alien Encounter was the impetus of creating a new Tomorrowland at Disneyland that was timeless. They don't want to have to update Tomorrowland every 5 years like they've had to. And, I mean, they still have to because they just put bad attractions there, but that's a whole other topic. However, they I think the success of, you know, I mean, while you look in Timekeeper and Alien Encounter no longer there, but at least the business success of the Tomorrowland refurbishment in 95 – at Walt Disney World led to the reinvention of all the Tomorrowlands across the Magic Kingdoms.
Well, it sounds to me then that Innoventions has no place in the Disneyland Magic Kingdom.
Which is funny with the new announcement of the
House of the Future.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to fit in with the image that you're describing.
I agree, but I think we also need to look back at where Disneyland was in 1998 and understand Innoventions is there was not the original idea for that building. It was that, you know, Galactic Review. Innoventions just has the benefit of corporate sponsorship that made it very attractive to the management of Disneyland at the time. So it doesn't fit. And
I guess what I'm saying is they just made a major announcement regarding a major sponsorship for a new creation within that location. And if it's not in keeping with the ultimate vision, I'm just surprised that they have this new announcement as opposed to kind of a redesign of that location.
Well, I think notably, usually Disney does 10-year announcement alliances. These are 5 years, they're not going to, they're not going to close the attraction because Innoventions because it doesn't fit.
Right. No.
And there was Compaq pulled out for obvious reasons; they don't exist anymore. And you know, there was empty space. They had to do something. So in the end, from a WDI side, but from an operator side who really pushed Innoventions going there, I bet you if you asked most Imagineers, that wasn't their first choice. But needing to keep it operating just for the sake of it's better than an empty building.
Right.
As we've known, we had to know for 10 years.
Yeah.
I think that's more of a symbolism of that. I mean, I think sometimes we need to – it's hard for us as fans on the outside to understand the difference between the decisions that are made by WDI for artistic reasons and the decisions that are made by Walt Disney World for operation reasons. The parade doesn't theme to the turn of the century. And I mean, but I don't think WDI would win the fight of saying, well, now we have to make all our parades theme to the turn of the century so they can go down Main Street.
Right. But I guess what you're saying is that ultimately something like Innoventions does not fit in with the grand vision of Tomorrowland in light of where Epcot's future world has gone, and so therefore we can expect to see at some point Innoventions take on a different – that location be something else. That's your what
I,
you
I
anticipate.
I agree. I would be surprised if Innoventions in there from 10 years – in 10 years or not drastically redefined. I mean, I think it's telling that the host of Innoventions is Tom Morrow, who looks identical to Timekeeper and is not realistic. It's not like Tom Morrow from Mission Rocket to the Moon.
And I haven't seen this House of the Future project either. It may take on a fanciful you may be showcasing modern existing technologies, but maybe they do it in a more fanciful way to embrace this new vision that, you know, they have brought to light with Buzz Lightyear and these other attractions. You know, I haven't seen it myself, so I can't speak to that.
What I find particularly amusing is the fact that while I can see this happening, the most recent attraction in Future World, if I'm not mistaken, is Nemo.
Yeah, I find that funny. Where, you know, I mean, that's what, when I heard Lee say that, the character stuff's going to be at Tomorrowland, and then they can have an adult version. There's not a lot of adult. I mean, it's family friendly, but it's not. I wouldn't consider an adult attraction in the same way as Soarin' is. Mm-hmm. While that's also for the family, it's not. Nemo is very much a dark ride.
Well, an omnimover.
But, I mean, a small scale.
Please don't debate this again.
What? That doesn't even make any sense.
Please don't debate this again.
Okay, we can move on.
I have to hear that debate between the two of you one more time.
One more time.
Oh, he's singing. He's singing.
That debate may be annoying, but there's something even more annoying that we brought up last week and that our readers and listeners, particularly our listeners, chimed in on this week, and that is bad background music. So, Rebecca, why don't you start us off?
Oh, it's funny that you should mention the teacups because Toby says he didn't feel that bad for them because they at least have a rotation where you move frequently between various
smaller
attractions.
Rotation?
I know, huh? Very funny.
Wow.
No, where you would rotate among Fantasyland, various Fantasyland locations, so you wouldn't necessarily have to endure the teacups very long. What he thought would be
that sounds like someone that knows someone that works there. Or
I
works
know, huh?
There. So, but unless CDS doesn't like you and you get double bombed.
Oh, all that CM speak. Toby also goes on to say that his fear, I guess if you want to put it that way, would be being in the DCA Sunshine Plaza area because it is a loop of very few songs all about California, played at an obviously high volume to be noticed, as he put it. So maybe you'll stop thinking about the giant hubcap.
Every time I've entered this park, except my last visit there, I always had to hear, I love L.A. every time. It's like,
we love it.
Can you even imagine, fanboy, how horrible it must be to hear that?
No, quite. I used to think that BGM loop was really short. So I actually had a friend of mine compile a list of the BGM. It is actually a fairly long loop. It just seems really short. Because they
all
about
the
same thing.
Mm-hmm.
With
words.
California this, California that.
And they're really loud.
California over there.
Because there's no guest there to absorb the sound.
And the mirrors bounce the sound
and
back.
Them off. And
the audio heliostat.
Maybe all the coffee fumes are doing something to amplify the noise.
You know, it's supposed to smell that way.
Now, Hank says that he thinks Primeval Whirl would be difficult because the CMs at Load would get to hear Hester say, please stand up before exiting, bye-bye, on a 10-second loop.
Being in line for that was enough to make me suicidal.
And then working on the Living with the Land greenhouses, particularly after the automated spiel, nothing quite beats hearing, here's something you don't see every day, tomato on trees, every 30 seconds, especially when you're the person who sees them every day. But my favorite that he mentions is being... And this is not based on BGM alone, but this is just what he thought he would like to nominate Journey into Imagination with Figment for the dubious honor of Worst Place to Work.
Why is he picking on me?
Oh, very funny. Because the poor soul, as he puts it, assigned to stand in the unload area, affectionately known as Spark in the Dark. Every time a train enters the unload area, the CM gets blasted with the same short closing verse of One Little Spark, combined with the lights continually turning on and off, and it sounds like some sort of psychological torture, he says. So I thought that you guys would enjoy
it. I'm gonna treat the CM better the next time I get off of Figment. That sounds terrible.
You should say, I feel for you, man. Just whenever you get out.
And then Submarine Maniac thought that Haunted Mansion would get on his nerves a little bit, but... he knows that many other people love that ride, so he realizes that he might be in the minority. Now, the one that surprised me was Magnet saying that the boat rides of Mexico and Norway would tank as far as work conditions for him. Now,
I can understand Norway.
If you're stuck in the movie position.
or even at the loading, every time somebody turns around, it's you are not the first to pass this way every 2 seconds.
You know what actually the bad position would be the unload where they have to go, welcome back, Vikings. Please exit to your right, and in a few minutes the doors will open so you can see a short film about Norway. Thank you, Captain Tom.
Now, he said Mexico, which I agree is insane. Someone hum the song. Get it in my head.
Three caballeros, three gay.
The original song.
What was that?
That's it. Okay. Jim and Merced talks about...
Is it really Merced?
Yeah.
I would say Jim and Merced. Actually, I pronounce it Jim and Pasadena, but...
Yeah, I know. A.K.A.
Merced is in California, isn't it?
Jim and Merced, California says, when I first joined up at Walt Disney World Attractions, summer 86... I spent June, July, August on the Davy Crocker Explorer canoes. Describes it as a great experience, free-floating canoes, young people hanging around.
Sounds like the 60s.
Then, when summer was over, canoes went into storage and it got moved to Jungle Cruise. Thought I would love it. My lead told me that I'd lose my mind in the jungle. I laughed at him. He said it would become like working in a factory. I laughed at him again. Know what? He was right. Jim goes on. Every day, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., two trips around his skipper. Load the boat for two trips. Unload the boat for two trips. Unload the boat for two trips. Load the boat for two trips. Another trips around the skipper. Take a break. Back from break, it starts all over again. Spiel, spiel, spiel. Joke, joke, joke. Elephant bathing pool. Schweitzer Falls. Trader Sam. 5 days a week. After 6 months, it got so incredibly tedious, but it also took a lot of work to look like I was fresh and having a great time, that I almost quit the company. Fortunately, I was able to get transferred to guest relations and so moved to Main Street attractions during the week while trained for guest relations on the weekends. That's why now, when I visit Disneyland and go on the Jungle Cruise, I don't begrudge those skippers if they seem a little tapped out.
Let's have some applause for the dramatic reading that has taken place here.
Yeah, for poor Jim. Dude, I'm sorry.
But it was funny because it reminded me of a story. I was talking with some Jungle Cruise CMs here in Florida, and they were sharing tales of why some of their coworkers weren't quite as enthusiastic as one might hope, and that was that they were college program individuals who had come here with the belief that they would be working the Haunted Mansion. And that was their one goal, was to come to Disney World and work the Haunted Mansion.
You need to dream bigger if you're going to
college. When they came here, they ended up being assigned to the Jungle Cruise. Well, as you can imagine, if you think about the types of people who may wish to work Haunted Mansion versus the types of people who may wish to work Jungle Cruise, you know, Jungle Cruise people, maybe more showmen, outgoing, extroverted types. Perhaps Haunted Mansion may attract a more introverted type of individual, perhaps maybe a little less social. Some might point to what do they say, what's the term now?
Gothic.
I was gonna say emo. Gothic. That kind.
Scary.
So no, not scary. There's
Dead?
Nothing scary about them. It's just that
possessed.
No.
Evil.
No. Just not quite as gregarious and funny entertainers. They may not be stand-up comedians in the making. That's all I'm saying. So it gave me
on the Jungle Cruise.
It gave me a new perspective on the poor person that is driving me around the river.
So they should call Nile. It the emo cruise. What you're saying now.
So Captain, what would be your nightmare attraction?
My nightmare attraction. Casey Jr. would be my nightmare attraction.
Oh, why?
You think?
There's just something about it to me. I enjoy writing, but the thought of actually working at Casey Jr. just seems very unappealing to me.
You can do it. I think you can. I think you can. I thought you could.
See, that's Casey, why, because I'd come back and I'd have to hear that every day. It's like, you thought you could do it.
Now, Ferret Afros says, I'm sorry, based on Ferret Afros' posting, I'm not sure that there's anywhere that we could find him a place to work in the Magic Kingdom. Because at Disneyland, he says that the positions in the film room in Indiana Jones would be pretty bad because the safety spiel would, you know, be very annoying. And then the outdoor position would be bad because of all the drumming. And then the screeching bird noises out there would be annoying.
Ah! Those weren't birds.
The Matterhorn positions where you hear yodeling would be annoying.
Is he agoraphobic?
The It's a Small World clock would be annoying. And then you can't work the soft serve place at Main Street Cross Street because there you have that dentist office and the piano lessons. Those great little clips that are nice to hear as you walk by.
I just think he's anti-BGM.
And then he's concerned that the buzzing songs of Tough to Be a Bug would lull him to sleep. And it's dark down there. But the last one that really stands out, he says, is, and I keep saying he, and I presume it's he.
Let us know.
Says, there are just too many Merrilies in the background music for comfort at Mr. Toad. Where? The load area also seems to have a loop as long as the Jurassic Park in Universal, which he points out, fanboy, is longer than you sang. It's two times the speed you sang it, followed by one time with the first three notes at the same speed, and the second three notes held out longer. But it's still about a 20-second loop at left.
Wow, the connoisseur.
Somebody listens to Fanboy. I sure don't.
we try not to. Yeah.
Sometimes you just can't help it. Anybody else want to chime in with a BGM nightmare?
I agree with all of those. And well, at least the first part. Primeval, Living with the Land Boat Ride, Journey of Imagination.
Sunshine Plaza.
Yeah, I could see that those being challenging positions.
You're so PC. Challenging positions.
Challenging positions.
I'm not really sure, because I tend to block a lot of that stuff out. So.
And anywhere at Paradise Pier.
It's a skill that lets you live with me.
Pretty much, I have a lot of... that's true, I do have a lot of training at blocking out repetitive noises I want to avoid. Doobie and fanboy.
I resemble that remark.
Pretty much.
Paradise Pier. I like Paradise Pier. That music I can handle very well.
And what's nice about Paradise Pier is it's the same song, but as you go through the different zones, it's different music. I mean, it's different ways of playing it.
So in that case, I wouldn't want to be at the Jumping Jellyfish one, I don't think.
You know what just struck me as driving me crazy that I think I couldn't do?
Uh-oh.
What?
Mullen Madness just
okay.
hit me.
Sorry, I forgot about that one.
We were sitting there eating some corn dogs. I thought I was going to die.
At least it's two different spiels. No, the one, if I had to work there, because just standing in line there for one loop is enough to...
Right?
Great movie ride.
You know, the
queue
movie,
area
the...
where they're showing the movie trailers.
Yeah.
Is it enough to make you scream?
The only one that's cool is Alien.
Woo!
Uh-huh. No, you don't. No, you don't. And everyone's favorite funny man, Dick Van Dyke.
Bad boy, you need to get out more.
I remember when it finally hit me that those were previews for the films we saw inside.
Yeah, I believe
ride.
It was last week when it finally hit me.
No. Oh, well, you, yeah. No.
Gotta dance. We're singing in the rain. Just singing in the rain. It's a radio to God.
You know what's sad and they don't show a longer clip for Alien in there.
No, that bothered me when I remember when we came here. I was very scared. I was very, very scared. In fact, if
scream?
It hadn't have been for that clip, I don't think I would have been
sure.
quite as scared when we went on the ride. Because since the clip was so scary to me in the queue, when we started to enter that area, a location that I previously had no awareness of, it was very, very freaky. I closed my eyes. I didn't see it. I didn't see it for like 10 years because the first time we went, I closed my eyes and didn't open them until we were out of there. So I had no idea what had just happened. And the noises I heard were horrendous and probably much more scary in my brain than the reality of what they were showing me.
Trust me, what they were showing was not scary. Question, fanboy.
That's my mother-in-law.
Who's over there making me laugh, doing, is this the worst animatronic in all of Disney? Sigourney Weaver?
Yeah.
In fact, we went to go see Vantage Point, and she's in it playing a director of a news broadcast.
And she
keeps looking at all the different monitors, and I didn't realize she could move her neck that quickly like that.
Well, now that I think about it, it kind of reminds me of those oversized murals on the ESPN Zone.
Oh, yes, and they're equally as scary.
My
Captain.
Oh, hey, can I jump in with a popcorn or churro?
Jump in? You mean leap in?
Why, yes, I do. It's the leap year edition of popcorn or churro.
Once a year at Disneyland, but every... Never mind.
What time is it?
First
leap
up,
year time?
We have, do you prefer popcorn or churro, the leaping Kanga or the leaping Roo?
First, I'd like to add that this is my favorite part of the show, and then I would go on and say,
popcorn or churro?
Kanga, because when she does it right, Rue goes along too.
Very good.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Kanga's got a pocket, and that's just pretty dang cool. I want a pocket. I tried, but it bled.
You're such a boy. It's disturbing.
You're
I like
sick,
Kanga.
Man.
And then my second one is the leaping Cricky or the leaping Jiminy Cricket. I know. Tough choice. They're both crickets.
I want to lie and say Cricky, but this voice in my head is making me say...
You're worried your nose will grow?
Yeah, Jiminy Cricket.
I'll go with Jiminy Cricket. He has a nice, you know, sense of fashion. Yeah, got an umbrella, top hat, and he can sing. That's cool.
I gotta go with Jiminy Cricket, not only because I am one of the world's biggest ukulele Ike fans, but I think that's just one of the best animated characters ever created. And while I like Creaky, I mean, Jiminy Cricket is classic, Ward Kimball's masterpiece.
And see, when you say Jiminy Cricket, like, the reaction is always going to be Jiminy every time.
Yeah. Although when you say Cricky, I think of Steve Irwin.
Every time I think of Jiminy Cricket, I get ready for a fireworks show.
What?
I'm just glad that they didn't kill him.
Jiminy
Cricket.
Oh, like the book.
Yeah.
Like the book, yeah.
Oh. Yeah,
you're scaring me for
because
a
it's a very delightful character. Can you imagine? That would have been very distressing.
And then I would have never learned how to spell encyclopedia.
E-N-C-Y-C-L-O-P-E-D-I-A.
And you wouldn't have lived to be 93.
W-I-K-I-P-E-D-I-A.
You wouldn't have learned to look both ways before crossing the street.
No, I learned that from Sigourney Weaver.
I have a PRC for the PC. L-P-P.
Yeah, you know me.
Rebecca joined in. Wow, you're getting your hip-hop on.
Yeah, sure. It's a leaping day, so I'll be hippy hoppity.
The Leaping Fountains of Splash Mountain or the Leaping Fountains of Imagination Pavilion?
Oh, Imagination Pavilion.
I'm going to go with Splash Mountain because no one can pee in those. And I know that.
This happens? I've not heard these stories. Oh, that's funny.
Have you seen how chlorinated that water is? It's for a reason.
That's disturbing.
Imagination for that very reason. It's just funny to see people play around in there.
And no matter what.
Everyone,
doing.
You gotta go. You
gotta, you gotta go.
It's nice to have a place. I'll go with Splash Mountain because they go over your head.
Unlike they go over the your head in imagination.
Yeah, but that's a big deal. You're just walking. Here, you're on a ride, and they go over your head.
Ooh.
I remember I rode Disneyland Splash Mountain, you know, a bazillion times, and I finally came to Disney World, and you know, forget the hoppity hippity rabbit thingy and all that, and the side by side seating was terrible, but the fountains went over my head, and I was just blown away.
You're so simple.
I am.
It's so cute.
I have a PRC. It's not hip-hop related word. But
Baby got.
The name Kingdom Tower or any other possible name for that development.
Why does that sound so ominous?
I think, because to me it kind of evokes the Dark Tower, which I've never heard of, or the Big Tower in Lord of the Rings, or the Tower of Terror. Tower is not a welcoming word.
Maybe the turret. Maybe they could have called it turret.
Or just called it, like,
the big tall thing.
Contemporary 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
Captain.
All right. This is a very, very special edition of the Captain's Challenge. Does anybody know why?
I think perhaps we have a winner.
We do indeed have a winner.
To celebrate with the fact that our DVD of Pirates 3 just finally finished that we started in December. Hey!
Hey! And so,
rousing chorus.
To answer the question I asked last time, there's a carved out chimpanzee on the Tree of Life in the back, and actually has a name, and we had a call in with the answer. This is after the winner posted in the forum topic, but I'll play this for the answer.
Hello, my name is Alex Wittenberg, and I am from I'm from Florida, so I attend Walt Disney World Resort regularly, and I am a big fan of your site. I listen to the podcast, and
thank you.
I would like to answer the Captain's Challenge from the February 22nd, 2008 episode. And that would be that the chimpanzee's name is David Greybeard, and it was put in for Jane Goodall. It was her favorite chimpanzee in the Tree of Life. Originally started out with 324 animal carvings, and then she put, or the Imagineers put in David Greybeard, and also a few other chimpanzees. Yes, again, my name is Alex Wittenberg, and that's it. Thank you.
So there you have it. Alex called in and told him that was the correct answer. Did the panel here know that answer?
Yeah, actually, I have some breaking news associated with that.
Really?
Yes. Jane Goodall will be at Disney's Animal Kingdom on April 22nd to celebrate the 10th anniversary. Or I should say she's scheduled to appear subject to change due to inclement weather.
But, you know, even though in the forum topic, we actually is our Sooner winner, but I'll give Alex a complimentary point for calling it in.
Yay.
You know, it's
thanks, Alex.
It's nice. We should. It would be cool if you know, like, if you could elaborate in detail. You should call in. You know,
that would be nice.
866-718-9408.
And don't just read Wikipedia.
866-718-9408. We want you to share the answer with the listening audience.
Today is the monumentous. We actually have the champion of the Captain's Challenge.
Woo-hoo!
Are the Russians and Americans here for this one?
Everybody, the pirates and the princesses are here today. And it is it goes to Magnet. So,
subject to a urine test.
So, yeah.
Magnet. Now,
I don't want to have to go in front of Congress and testify.
We better make sure that the medal is authentic, because otherwise it would be embarrassing, because it would very easily know that we just had a piece of cheap metal. So
what this means now Magnet is one of our Captain Challenge champions. Let's try saying that three times fast. And now that means that all of the points that I've been giving out, we're all back to square one. We're all back to zero, and the competition...
Wait, zero or square one?
You know, the square of one is one.
Square one. And but Retloff fan, because, you know...
Nap Walter.
Nap Walter, Retloff fan. I'll give him a head start still for the Hand Tanner Productions and turning that one around, and we got one for Alex. So Alex and Retloff fan...
All right, square two.
Square two. And they're the ones to...
How many squares are there?
But be careful of that go back three spaces spot.
Sorry.
So they're now.
If you go to jail, just roll three times and try to get the doubles.
And so now they are the ones to beat.
This is becoming as convoluted as that lost
game. Just to clear this up,
nothing is as convoluted as a lost board game.
The caller and Nat Falter have won.
Everybody else is back to zero.
And if I'm not mistaken, Magnet went on to say that in honor of his winning, he will retire.
He will retire.
Wow. But he can still call in with answers. That would be nice.
That would be nice.
So that way he can still participate in the game.
The next question. Do you have a challenge for today?
Actually, I am getting prepared to do a special quote edition next episode, which will be multiple questions where you'll have to match the character with the quote. So there's no Captain's Challenge this episode. But tune in next time.
Taking a hiatus in preparation for a new format.
Exactly. So.
I think you just ran out of questions during the writer's strike. Is that what happened? That's what it seems like.
Well, you know.
All right. Well, thank you
gotta
very
do
much.
What you gotta do.
Thank you very much for that very SE edition of the Captain's Challenge. That was
Are you
exciting.
Sure it was an SE? It wasn't a platinum edition?
It was a two-disc SE. I'm not sure why it wasn't a platinum.
Okay.
But I suspect later on I will pay $25 again to get the
There
platinum.
Wasn't so the audio commentary the on this one?
No audio commentary.
And do you get the Vista edition? I don't even remember that. They did like
oh, that's
2 weeks.
Right,
and
yeah.
it was the gold classic.
Oh, man.
So, Fanboy got some email.
Yay.
Before we
it's
get
about in, time. I signed up for that email account years ago.
Before we get into his myth, I did want to read this. It says, Dear LPP.
Yeah, you know me.
It actually says that in the email. We are students at Western Washington University and are huge
Go
Disney
Go WWU.
Fans.
What are you guys? Are you like the banana slugs, like UC Davis or... Do you see the Blue Devil from Duke take a fall yesterday? Or the Bruins? Go Bruins.
We love your podcast, and especially Fanboy.
Yay!
His comment...
Oh, I have an idea. You should petition your school president. You should be the WWU Fanboys.
They continue.
Why are you encouraging this?
His commentary and jokes are underappreciated and are the highlight of the show for us. Mm. We just want him to know that he's our favorite part of the show.
Yay!
He's our favorite part of the show. He's our favorite part of the show. Fanboy.
Fanboy? They're the Vikings.
Wow.
Yeah, that's unoriginal. They should change their name. WWU Fanboys.
They continue.
And it's the women's team. They should be the Fangirls.
We're glad that there are still guys our age out there that appreciate Disney as much as we do. Keep up the excellent work, and we are looking forward to future podcasts. Sincerely, Fanboys Fan Club.
Oh,
P.S.
No.
P.S. We realize we forgot to mention...
866-718-9408.
That we are girls.
866-718-9408.
We figured this changes the context...
866-718-9408.
...of the message.
Wow.
Wow.
866-718-9408.
Did we just become love
podcast at laughingplace.com?
Did this become the dating game?
LPPdate.com. LPPdate.com.
Hey, you
now
know,
you have to register that.
We can make, like, money. You know that how they have J-Date so people who are Jewish can find people who are Jewish? We need to have, like, D-Date so people who are Disney fans can find other people who are Disney
fans. You know,
fans.
Believe it or not, that at least did exist because I remember getting an advertising inquiry on
that. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, we
I'm
just
not
had,
sure it still exists.
We just had the internet, so I knew that you were Doobie, and I went over and said hi to you. Someday we should probably tell people how we met. So,
on a very special LaughingPlace.com podcast.
Yeah. Maybe as we approach the anniversary of the establishment of the website, we can share a little bit more about the history. That would be in August.
Now, to bring Fanboy back down to earth, by the way, in case you missed that, girls, that was 866-718-9408. Back down to earth a little bit, Joe writes regarding a past myth. I was just listening to your podcast from a couple weeks ago, and on the myth section of the Hidden Mickey's book was mentioned. Yeah. I'm new to the podcast, so I think it was Fanboy who was saying that they are not put in on purpose for some attractions. Anyway, when Disneyland reopened Space Mountain, I thought I noticed that on the cars, each seat had a hidden Mickey. The head pad and two speakers. Is that a hidden Mickey, or am I trying too hard to find one? Thanks, and keep up the good work.
You're trying too hard.
No, you're not. You can never try too hard to find a hidden Mickey.
It's a head pad with speakers so that
the
you can
have
sound.
The magic is all
are you
around
saying
us.
They just happen to be shaped like Mickey's? It's
yes.
just a coincidence? It just,
yes.
quote, turned out that way?
Yes, Senator.
Quiet. You've had your turn. It's my turn to talk.
Let's listen to the man we all love. Nature's plan will shine upon. Listen to the land, listen to the land. Let's listen to the land we all love.
Yeehaw!
Nature's plan will shine upon. Listen to the land, listen to the land.
Nothing like a little Molina.
Just make believe.
Moline.
Yeah. You're a tiny little seed.
He's a nice guy. We saw him speak one time at
a tiny little seed. Was he reaching out to meet your need?
He was singing the little
Wait, that doesn't come
across
right.
No. We had the opportunity to hear him live one time. He came and he spoke to the L.A. chapter of the NFFC.
What's his name? Dan Moline? Don Moline?
I think it's
Moline.
Bob.
Bob Moline.
Bob Moline. He brought a guitar with him.
He also wrote that song that you love so much from the Canada Pavilion.
Canada, mm-hmm. That is my absolute favorite Disney song. Fanboy, you got a myth this week.
Yes, I do. Speaking of Disney songs, we all love the Sherman Brothers. They write some of the best, if not the best, Disney song ever written. Great, Big Beautiful Tomorrow, for those that are playing along at home.
Are you about to rip off ABC News?
No. Disney myth. We all know that they wrote many songs for Disney films, such as Trust in Me.
Trust in Me.
That song at the end. I am hunting in the forest. But they did not write the Academy Award winning Bare Necessities. Look for the Bare Necessities. The
they
simple.
Did not.
No, they did not.
Who did write it, by the way?
I don't know. But they were whoever it was. Who cares? It's not the Sherman Brothers.
I suspect the person who did write it by care.
Well, true. But
isn't it like Gilkison or something like that?
Yeah, like something like that. I remember that.
Terry Gilkison.
So
did the lyrics? Did the lyrics.
To sum up, the Sherman Brothers wrote every song in the Jungle Book except the one that won the Academy Award.
Oh, I never thought about
Stupid
it in
Academy.
Those terms. That's pretty funny.
Okay, they got it in 1964. They're good. Thank you, Fanboy, for that.
Oh, I love. There's no way knocking the Sherman Brothers. They write the best music ever.
However,
Pineapple
Docious,
Princess, top Docious of my iTunes playlist.
Docious Aliexpiestic Fragicalirupus is not. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious backwards, as we learned in a special ABC news report.
I know. I was watching Carpoolers on ABC for some
Why?
Unknown reason.
Okay.
And the breaking news. Dun, 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 dun. Just Charlie Gibson came on. We just got this in from our reporter. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is not docioexpialidocious backwards. It is. It's like a bad.
Did you watch that?
Yes, I did. And that only
it was a clip on ABCnews.com. I presume it was pulled out of the World News Report, and it was Charlie Gibson. And literally, he sat there, and it was this is this guy doing a little snip. It was one of those little throwaway. We've got a minute and a half. What are we gonna do? And they took the audio of the song and played it backwards so that you could hear that it wasn't really supercalifragilisticexpialidocious backwards. Shocking.
And wow. I mean, I don't watch a lot of news. All my news does come from from ABC News, because more Americans do get their news from ABC News than any other source.
Charlie Gibbs is the most trusted.
NBC.
NBC.
However, I saw the report three times. I can't imagine that is the most important thing they have to tell you. I mean, it's not like it's an election year or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Feedback. Let's see. You want to read that first one, Rebecca?
Hey, guys, and Rebecca. I was wondering if you could post a picture of the four of you on the Laughing Place website. I know who Doobie and Rebecca are from NFFC meetings, but have no idea what Fanboy and Captain John look like, and I really like putting names to faces. I just want you to know how much I love the podcast and listening to you all. You sound like you have so much fun together. Guess that is what Disney is supposed to bring us together for fun. Thanks for considering this. Cindy, star of the North Minnesota chapter.
Yeah,
of the NFFC. They're such a fun bunch up there, the star of the North.
It's all an act. This is so miserable to do.
Yeah.
We should win the Academy Award. If we sound like we're having so much fun together, we deserve the Oscars.
Yeah, as soon as this is over, we all go our four separate ways and never speak to each other again.
And as far as the picture goes, we actually, if I'm not mistaken, we did put up a picture of the four of us attending the ice at the Gaylord Palms in one of my blog postings. So
oh, yeah, we
it's
may have
there.
Done that.
It may be a little bit hard to make out Fanboy and the Captain, but they're there.
However, if the girls from Western Washington University want to send any pictures, podcast@laughingplace.com or 866-718-9408, 866-718-9408.
I just want to say, you Vikings at Western Washington University,
we are so sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. This has made me feel better.
Oh, it's funny. Okay, and we have more feedback and a correction for Hank. Were you beginning to feel bad for your poor little fanboy friend?
He needs a girl. Or a harem, it sounds
like. I know. Wow. Hey. I just wanted to weigh in on the confusion over the Italy Pavilion Epcot's World Showcase. Here's an excerpt from page 88 in the book Walt Disney Imagineering, a behind the dreams look.
That was my excerpt, Sam.
Oh, I was like, whoa.
I didn't know we had that budget.
Wow. A behind the dreams look at making the magic real. And the quote begins. Those who are familiar with the original Venetian buildings, however, will notice that this World Showcase arrangement is reversed. No, the negative for the illustration above this caption wasn't printed backwards. Bill Martin arranged the landmarks these way so as to not do a cold copy of the originals. He felt that this way, the Italy Pavilion could enjoy its own unique identity. So that's what they did. They did not recreate it exactly the same way as if you had taken a picture of the location in Italy.
Do you know the real reason why they had trouble getting the Venetian buildings right? Because they were blind.
Venetian blinds, that's terrible.
I was gonna. Yeah, that was bad. I was gonna say that's what happens when Imagineering hires a former Yankee manager.
Billy Martin.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You're really into ESPN the weekend now, aren't you?
You could hear Cricky chirping at that statement.
And Steve Irwin.
Hank went on to say he recalls hearing somewhere that the placement was partially in an effort to provide a visual counterpart to the Japan Pagoda.
My pagoda.
My pagoda. You guys are just scary.
All right.
If I'm not mistaken,
and you guys are recipients of mercy, we have no more feedback. We have no more phone calls. We have no more topics. We have nothing else. Podcast@laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. I do have a correction. It is section 176 of the discussion boards, not 171 of the discussion boards, as I've been saying.
What is 171?
World events. You don't want to go there. Don't make that mistake. Whole different ball game.
176 is much more fun.
Yeah.
Are you going to announce our very special podcast next week?
I'll get there.
No. Just checking.
That was a tease.
That was, as I learned, they do those in the radio biz.
Yeah, we'll be right back. Laughing Place Podcast.
Laughingplace.com.
Oh, dear. Have you guys been rehearsing that?
Yes. Actually, no.
That's embarrassing.
He said he would do it, and he remembered.
Wow.
Where was I? Oh, yeah. Before we depart, you guys know the drill. Captain, go first.
Well, let's see. I was watching Jay Leno last night, and Miley Cyrus and Billy Ray Cyrus were on.
Aww.
And I learned something very interesting about Miley Cyrus. Apparently, she's at a phase where she likes to drink ketchup.
Oh, I've heard that from her before. She loves ketchup. She'll just take the packets, like she's an annual pass holder, and suck them.
No, she demonstrated by taking a bottle. There was a bottle of ketchup on there, and drink it.
That's why her dresser's red.
Quick question. Was it ketchup or catsup?
I think it was ketchup. Okay. And you know, I guess that's where she gets her silky, you know, voice from. And
I want to just make
that's
sure
the
that
secret
we have a public service announcement we need to do. If you are going to drink ketchup, please make sure you are only drinking variety 34. That is the only variety suitable for drinking.
Not 35?
Oh no, no, no. That'll give you indigestion.
Not 32.
No, that gives you hives.
Okay.
Thank you, Captain. Any other words of, you know?
All right. So last week I mentioned that it was Introduce a Girl to Engineering Day. Well, today...
Also, Introduce a Girl to Fanboy Day. 866-718-9408.
Now, as you hear this, it is leap year day. You know, that's not particularly exciting, but...
Before you go on, can I interrupt you? I'm sorry, I have to do this. Last week was Introduce a Girl to Engineering Day. Magnet posted, who is a scientist at least, I'm not sure if he's an engineer, that he spent all day, he writes today, which was last Saturday, volunteering at a science fair as part of a community outreach program here in his city, where he introduced many, many girls and boys and their parents, as well to science and engineering. He built a 20,000-volt electrostatic generator using common household items, and he's going to show them how to do the same. I'm not sure if that last part's right or if he really is MacGyver, but just wanted to say that engineers did take this day to heart. Continue.
Oh, all right. Well, I hope you like chili because it's National Chili Day.
Really? I know where the best chili in Orlando is.
Really?
Yes. We went to Lake Eola. Now, Lake Eola is a lake in Orlando where the Walt Disney Company donated an amphitheater. And so for some reason we needed to go see it. It's not small, kind of reminiscent of...
Better Partif.
Yeah, of a... No, that's not imperative, Partif. Mais non. I want to say it kind of looks like the Disney MGM Studio greeter costumes at the park greeters, at those green ones.
And it looked just like that.
And so, but as we parked our car and Doobie got lost for a good, an hour?
Just enough time for us to get there right on time.
As we left 3 hours early. And there was a sign, Orlando's number one chili. So if you are ever at the Walt Disney World Resort and you want to try some great chili, rent a car, drive up I-4, get lost for about 3 hours, park near the...
Sign that says World's Best Chili.
Yeah, but not the public parking that everyone else parks in near the library. Park in the one that looks kind of decrepit because you couldn't figure out how to get to the library parking garage.
Captain, please continue.
This is what happens when I don't go along for the ride, apparently.
And you know, as another note, if you had some sort of, you know, dental procedure today, it's also National Tooth Fairy Day. So keep that in mind.
Woohoo!
I want a dollar.
I love the Tooth Fairy. She used to leave me $10 for a tooth.
Dude.
Wow.
Yep.
You know what it's like to grow up in the hood, where we were lucky if we got 50 cents.
I got a new camera once. It was awesome.
A new camera?
Yeah, because I had to have a lot of teeth pulled for braces. So
that must have been very uncomfortable to sleep on.
That's what I'm thinking. Ow!
So it was cheaper for the tooth fairy to bring me a camera than to actually pay me the $10 I was accustomed to per tooth.
Thank you. What's your name, Captain? And
the captain cannot...
What's his name?
Such disgrace.
This is a mutiny.
A mutiny, eh?
No.
Not really.
Yeah, it's like, you really want to try to get through me?
Not really.
Which one of you two wants to go next?
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Oh, Rebecca.
I'll go.
All right, man, boy.
ABC, part of
Magic
of the
you know me.
No.
No.
You can't do that for everything that rhymes.
Watch us. The American Broadcasting Company, part of the Magic of the Walt Disney Company, announced two fairly big deals this week.
One?
Three.
Three.
They were actually going to do four, but they couldn't get it through without biting. The first one was they announced that their programming will be available through video on demand. So not only...
That's very cool.
You will... Apparently, Happy doesn't like ABC Video On Demand.
That was quite the growl over there. Little
he's
boy.
A TiVo stockholder.
Wow.
Anyway, so not only do you, like, if you forget to DVR or TiVo or whatever term you want to use to digitally video record your favorite programs, you can actually go back and watch them on TV. There'll be commercials, but less than the ones that you would see in broadcast. And it's really sort of the first shot against TiVo, because or DVRs, because if you have it and you can just download it, you don't need to remember to tape it or sit through the regular commercials. And they, the way that this was made was that they agreed with the affiliates that your local ABC station could have one commercial in the half hour and make money, hopefully, because that's the, what makes the world go round. And but the second one is also they announced...
That was energy.
No, that's profound.
You make the world go round and round.
You make the
world go round.
And what makes... What? How do you get energy?
Money.
Thank you. they also announced that they will... the formation of Stage 9 Digital Media, which is designed to create, at least temporarily bad, original content for ABC.com and YouTube. Hopefully it will improve. But they started with a show called...
Schmancy.
Started with a show called Squeegees. And it's really the first...
Dare I ask what that's about?
It's about people that squeegee windows. It's not that mind-blowing. but it's they're really the first network to create their own studio focused just on creating online entertainment that can be distributed through various channels that is really not related at all to any ABC show or anything like that. So once again, Bob Iger, ABC, leading the way. Woohoo!
Yeehaw.
Thank you, Mr. Bay. Rebecca.
Well, today, DB and I had the opportunity to interview some of the creative individuals involved with the development of Yak and Yeti. And it was really terrific. It was once again a reminder of why Disney is so special. We talked a lot about story and how important story is, that you have to have a good story before you move any further on a project. And a lot of talk about Disney and how he was a storyteller and how that's been passed on now to, you know, the next generation within Imagineering, and that that's still, you know, paramount to their projects. And in this particular case, it was a very interesting kind of a kismet situation where Steven Schuschler, the founder of Rainforest Cafe, his creative group had an idea for a Pan-Asian concept, and it fit very nicely with the footprint that was available there at Animal Kingdom. And so together in partnership with Lowry's doing the food, we ended up with this one of my favorite eateries here at Walt Disney World, and that's Yak and Yeti.
Yak and Yummy.
So the afternoon, I mean, it was meant to be a very brief interview. I was, you know, when I had set it up with them, it was, you know, just to be very simple, 30-minute kind of thing. And we ended up spending a couple hours with them just hearing amazing tales of the just the teamwork and the passion and the love of providing a unique, immersive guest experience. And you could just tell that that was a driving force, that ultimately they wanted to make sure that when you came to Yak and Yeti that you had a quality guest experience that transported you to the Himalayan mountains. And that was it's just so much fun, and it reminded me of why it is that I love Disney and covering Disney, because it's just a chance to hear those stories. And I'll be writing about it for the magazine, and I'm sure some of it will also appear on the website as well, and probably on the podcast, you know, in further detail too, because there was just so much information and so many little stories that came out, and it was just so I don't know. I left there just so excited.
Ready to take on the world.
Seriously, I walked from the parking. You know, when you know how big Animal Kingdom parking lot is, all of you who have been there, we were parked way out in Dinosaur.
Winnie the Blinkin' Dinosaur.
Yeah, we were way out there. And I told Dewey, can we just walk back to the car? Because I didn't want to have to walk and sit on a tram. And wait. I had all this energy to burn off from that. And, you know, so
it makes the world go round and round.
It was a great experience. And I look forward to reading what you write about it in the magazine. That should be in issue number 12, the next issue, which will be focused on Animal Kingdom's 10th anniversary.
It's not a zoo.
You know, something that no one mentioned that I thought would get – no one really mentioned that I thought would get mentioned before it got to me, so I guess I will.
The Inchworm?
Yeah. We went to High School Musical, a huge production of it done by a local theater company in about a 150-seat theater.
It was a 260-seat theater.
250-seat theater at the Orlando Science Center,
which
is a cool place.
It's a brand new stage company. This is only, what, their second or third production?
Second production, I think. And it was awesome.
It was amazing.
It was amazing what they did on this little stage and with these local actors, some of them in high school, I think.
Yes, yes. The,
so it was an actual high school musical.
The gal who was playing Gabrielle was a high school senior.
Yeah.
It was very
the
cool.
Highlight.
What was the highlight?
The inchworm.
Inchworm Private Eye, yeah.
One of the things, one of the added sequences was the detention scene. So there they are in detention with the drama teacher, and they're being made to act as various animals as part of, you know, the drama class detention. And there was one of the high school students who was being an inchworm, and he was very tall, and he was able to... it was amazing. Well, how would you describe what he did?
Basically, he would lay down, and then he would get into the...
Fold his body in half so his behind was sticking way up in the
and
air, and then spread back down, crawling across the stage this
without the use
way.
Of his arms or without visibly moving his legs. He
right.
He's apparently
purely
some strong
using
abs.
His abs. It was amazing. So. And the funny thing was it totally upstaged the rest of the dialogue going on stage. You know, you had Gabriella pretending to be a cat while she was exchanging information with Taylor, and you had Troy... and Chad pretending to be birds while exchanging information, but everybody's eyes were on Mr. Inchworm. That
yeah,
was
quite the applause. Quite
yeah,
the applause.
when he made his way all the way across the stage.
So that was cool. Go ahead.
Also, I like the nice touch of in the lockers. They had posters of Zac Efron and the Hailey Mann Cyrus, Hannah Montana, the Jonas Brothers.
That was for copyright purposes in the UK.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was a great touch.
It was a whole lot of fun. We were in the front row. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was just so impressed with their vocal talent, the staging, because it wasn't terribly elaborate. And they had so little space to work with.
They even had a live band.
Yeah.
Which they put right in the center of the stage up on a riser, so they were kind of there, but in the background, it was all done so well.
And the way that they choreographed Keep Your Head in the Game with the basketball.
Get your head in the game.
Thank you. I knew
keep
that was right.
Keep your head in the game.
Keep
call
it.
Yourself
it.
A Disney
oh, right.
fan.
I knew it didn't sound right, but nobody was correcting me. Thank you, Captain. And then with the final sequence where you have Troy making the winning basket, they used the same theatrical gimmick that was used for Disney on Ice, where it's a day glow... basketball on a stick that's illuminated with black light so that everything around it kind of goes dark and the basketball glows as it travels into the basket. I thought it was a clever way to make sure that you never miss the shot.
It was awesome.
We had so much fun.
That was amazing. Not just because we're Disney fans, but that was a quality production regardless. And
I'm looking forward to Oliver.
Oi.
Oh, that's right. That's
two productions away.
Doobie just can't wait to get some more.
But fess up, you two. There was one bio in there that had the two of you in stitches.
Okay, we mentioned that we were going to... Wait, did we mention this on the air?
We mentioned that we went to see Beetlejuice, the Graveyard Review. Yes, we talked
no,
about...
No, but we made a mention, because Fanboy said, I wonder where they're going to find local talent. Because last week we talked about how we were going to do this. And he's like, I wonder where they'll find local talent. And I said, the Beetlejuice show at Universal.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And then we go and we're reading their bios. And, of course, tons of them were Disney. And one of them was Disney and starred in the Beetlejuice. Wolfie.
Wasn't that the inchworm?
Wolfie in Beetlejuice. I honestly can't tell you
that
whether
was
or
funny.
Not it was.
And there was also one that was the stunt performer for Wishes.
Yeah.
Which you don't usually think of Wishes as having a performer. But think about it.
But if you think about it, I think there's one particular stunt performer who might pop into
who
mind.
Played the part of Kelsey, the shorter petite member of the high school.
The piano player.
And real quick, we'll do another quick segment here. Fanboy and Doobie's 30 word or less movie review. We saw Vantage Point this week. Fanboy, 30 words or less.
Well, gee. Okay, there's three. I liked the movie. It definitely goes in the, we have different categories, very good, good, okay, and bad, if I'm not mistaken. And I would say it goes in the very good category. But on the lower end of the very good, it was a little too predictable and a lot repetitive.
It was too predictable because it was the same scene done 15 different times. That said, it was a really good movie, didn't disappoint. I agree, the lower end of the very good. Third best movie of the year so far. Behind... I'm out of words.
Do we have a rating system? I mean, do we have like a... No. How many...
Oh, you'll have to come up with that.
Something. How many popcorns or churros it gets. Yeah,
we'll come up with that later. All right. Let's see. I think that just about does it for today's show. Wanted to let you know that we will not have our normal podcast next week because Fanboy will be attending the shareholders meeting. But he will come back in time for us to do a very special daylight savings time party, trying to keep our eyes open, late night podcast. And then we'll get it up as soon as we can after that.
We're going to have a lot to talk about. We have the annual meeting, ESPN the weekend, soft opening of Block Party Bash. It's going to be a long
and
good thing we have an extra hour.
We're not going to bed, so
I guess we don't have an extra hour. We have an anti hour.
So not sure when we'll get it up. Hopefully Sunday, maybe Monday, but
depends if we wake up.
Keep an ear out for it. And let's see, happy leap day once again. February 29th, we hope you're enjoying this once every 4 years.
If you're in town, go to Animal Kingdom. They're having a frog fest.
Really? So that means if you want to, you know, a year from now, it's almost as if this podcast never existed.
No, this podcast doesn't exist again for 4 years.
So, yeah. It's like Pirates of Penzance.
No. Brigadoon.
Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Brigadoon's like every... way more than that, but he's right. He's right. It's a Pirates of Penzance.
I'm the pirate. I should know. Pirates of Penzance.
Sorry, didn't mean to step in there.
I'm the very model of a cartoon individual.
Close, uh-huh. But no.
Podcast at laughingplace.com.
Did you want to invite the people to tell us why they love Epcot?
866-718-9408. And thank you, Rebecca. We still have two things we'd love your input on, or a section 176 of the discussion boards. Let us know what your niche parts right. Let us know what your niche park ideas are. And next week, or maybe the week after, since next week, as Fanboy said, has quite a slate. But soon, we're going to talk about a little more about Epcot. I wrote a blog entry yesterday on why Epcot is my favorite park, at least when I wrote it. And I'd like to talk about that on the podcast, get the panels here, opinions of Epcot and why, what makes it, not really a critical view of it, but what makes it special to you. And so if you guys have some thoughts out there, podcast11place.com, 866-718-9408, podcast section of the discussion boards. And like they say to the animals, that's the end of the line.